As we think about our memories and we think about memorials, of course there are a lot of different kinds of memorials. Some are just individual memorials that people have, but we want to think about for just a moment some of our nation's memorials. And you see a picture on the screen there of the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. And it looks pretty big there, and it is a pretty good size thing, certainly not as big as some of them, not as tall and not as much grandeur as some of the others. But as we think about memorials, we want to ask the question, what is the greatest memorial in the history of the world? And as we consider that, we want to think about all of the memorials that there have been throughout the history of the world. They started very early on. I suppose in a way, you could even say that God placing the cherubim with the flaming swords out to keep Adam and Eve from getting back to the tree of life in some ways made that a memorial to remind them of what they'd lost, to remind them where they couldn't go and couldn't return to that tree of life there in the Garden of Eden. But as we think about that, there's probably, from that time on, there were probably many other memorials that we certainly would think of. And as we think of those, we want to think about in our own country, there are 84 memorials and monuments in the U.S. that are national memorials, national monuments to certain places, people, events that happened in the United States, people who did great things like the Jefferson Memorial there, he of course being one of the founders of our country and very highly thought of by many people. Sometimes it's just a certain place where something really special happened at that place. Sometimes it's an actual event that occurred. As we think about memorials, and we're thinking about the greatest memorial, I want us to think, first of all, about what the greatest memorial is not. The greatest memorial is not the tallest. The tallest memorial in our country is the Gateway Arch in St. Louis. It's 630 feet high. That's really high. If you've ever seen the thing, if you stand underneath it and try to look up at the top, you'll fall over backwards trying to look up at it. That's how tall it is. And you can see from that picture. You might think that I squished that picture to make it look tall. That's actually how that thing looks from down on the ground when you're looking up at it. Well, the greatest memorial is not the tallest. The greatest memorial is also not the largest. The Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall is actually the largest memorial. They built an entire huge building. It's so large, there were some pictures of the inside where they have a huge ballroom that can seat, I think, upwards of 2,000 people in there. And so it's a massive building. And this, of course, just the front of it. But that's not the greatest memorial that there is. Of course, on the other hand, it's not the smallest either. The Father Millett Cross is 18 feet high. Big difference from that 630 that the Gateway Arch in St. Louis was, isn't it? This one's only 18 whole feet. Well, it's the smallest of our national monuments, but it's not the greatest memorial of all. It's not the oldest either. That's not what makes it great. Just because it's the oldest, Washington Monument was built in 1884. It was our first memorial or monument that was built in this country. Of course, as young as our country is, that has nothing to do with some of the memorials and monuments that were built, for example, in ancient Egypt, where the pyramid or the Great Sphinx was built some 2,500 years before Christ. So certainly, just because it's old does not make it the greatest. It's not that it's the most expensive. You know, there are a lot of expensive things in this world, but just because something's expensive, that does not mean it's great. The 9/11 memorial that they have just recently completed cost $500 million to build. Considering it's just a couple of squares with some trees around it, that seems a little high. But $500 million to build it. But what's worse is it's going to cost $60 million a year to maintain it. $60 million a year. Maybe we could all get a job working for them, I think. But that one is certainly the most expensive by far. But, you know, it's also, I'm going to cheat a little bit here because we're going to go outside the United States for just a minute. It's not the most valuable monetarily, the one that's worth the most money. The Eiffel Tower is valued at $579 billion. I bet it didn't cost $500 million to build that thing either. $579 billion, that's a lot of money. That is quite valuable. But it's not the greatest memorial that there is. It's not the newest memorial. In 2011, they built the Martin Luther King Jr. Monument. Finally finished it in 2011. It's certainly not as big as some of the others, and it's kind of interesting, a little carved out figure of Martin Luther King Jr. on it. It's the newest memorial, but just because something's the newest doesn't make it the greatest either. In fact, there is actually one memorial that is incomparable to all of these others, cannot even begin to compare to this one simple memorial that was left for us some 2,000 years ago in a small upper room in an obscure Jerusalem house. No one even knows where this memorial began. And the great thing about this memorial is, unlike all of those others, you don't have to go somewhere far off to go find that. You don't have to go to Paris or Egypt or to Washington, D.C. even. This memorial you can find right in your local congregation every Sunday. It accomplishes every goal of every other memorial and something that no other memorial can accomplish. And we're going to look at then what this memorial can do. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 29, Paul says, "For I have received of the Lord that which also I delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. When he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me.' After the same manner, he also took the cup when he had supped, saying, 'This cup of the New Testament in my blood. This do as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you drink this, eat this bread and drink this cup, you show the Lord's death until he comes. Therefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For whoever eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body." A simple memorial. I suppose, in a way, compared even to the smallest of our national memorials, that millet cross that we showed a moment ago, that was 18 feet. Well, the Lord's memorial is much smaller even than that, isn't it? It's so small that we could easily carry it around in our pockets or in a purse, in a small bag. It doesn't have to take up a huge lot, a huge block of a city, or anything like that. As we consider the Lord's memorial, we want to consider some things that the Lord's memorial does, some things that it helps us to do. The first thing the Lord's memorial helps us to do is to look backwards. Now, I know there are things that say, you know, forgetting those things that are behind and looking forward and that kind of thing, but there are times where there are events that we need to look back to. There are things that we need to learn from. There are things in the past that we need to remember and not forget. And certainly, the Lord's memorial points us back. Every memorial has this goal. Every single one of these memorials that we've seen on the screen, as well as the dozens of others that we didn't look at, all have the goal of reminding someone of something. Chances are, though, some of us have no idea even what those memorials remind us of. I don't know about you, but I never heard of the Father Millet Cross, and I have no idea why they built a memorial of a cross and named it Father Millet Cross. I have no idea what that meant. No reason to have ever learned about that. Now, I may be familiar with one as famous as the Jefferson or the Washington, and most of us have probably seen pictures of the Eiffel Tower or something like the Lincoln Memorial. We see it on the back of every penny just about there for several years. Now they're switching the backs up, but it helps us to look backward to some great event or some great person or some great time or place where things amazing were happening. And we need them because we are a forgetful people. It is sad, actually that if we asked a great many people, who was the first president of the United States of America? Many people would not realize who it was. And probably you don't either, because technically it wasn't George Washington. There was a president under the Articles of Confederation before we had the Constitution. But we don't count them. But most people, there are a lot of people who wouldn't even say George Washington. They say, I don't know. They don't remember. We're so forgetful as a people, and just people in general. We forget things so easily. And so looking backward to help us remember. And we think about that. Joshua chapter 4, verses 5 through 9. Joshua said to them, "Pass over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of Jordan River, and take up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you that when your father asks, that when your children ask your fathers in times to come, what do you mean by all these stones?" So they were going to go out in the river and they were going to pick up some stones and they were going to pile them up and make a monument, make a memorial. And they were going to have this big pile, as big of a stone as they could carry. So I don't know how strong those fellows were, but probably some pretty good sized stones. And they were going to build them there, right there on the bank of the river. And then he says that the point of it is, your children are going to see that. And you know children are naturally curious anyway, but when they see a big pile of rocks, they're going to say, "Daddy, what does that big pile of rocks mean? What are those there for?" And so Joshua then tells them, "You'll answer them, the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when we passed over Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever." Well, guess what? Nobody knows where those stones are now. That's how forgetful those people were. They did not even remember where they put their memorial. You know, all of us, where'd I park my car? You know, we've lost our car. They lost their memorial. They didn't know, no telling now where that thing was. They don't have it anymore. But the children of Israel did it. They put the 12 stones there so that it could be there. And at the time that Joshua writes this, he says, and they're there to this day. Well, they were at that time. And who knows? Perhaps they are still there. But nobody knows where there is because they've lost track of it. Can you imagine us losing the Washington Monument? We built a monument for our first president around here somewhere. Where did we put that thing? Well, I guess that's why we build it so big. You can see it from miles away. Maybe you won't lose one that big. But this memorial was certainly an important memorial for the children of Israel, but certainly by no means comparable to the greatest memorial that the Lord had. The Lord's memorial is also for remembrance. The whole point is for us to remember this. We saw that in 1 Corinthians 11, there in verses 23 through 25, that when we do these things, we're doing it in remembrance of Him. When we eat that bread, when it remembers His body. When we drink the cup, it remembers His blood. And we're remembering His death until He comes again. Now, it's amazing, isn't it? They lost track of a great big pile of rocks. But here we are some 2,000 years later, and as small as that little piece of bread and that little cup of juice is, we haven't lost our memorial. And we need to be sure that we don't. It's the greatest memorial that there is. Now, to some degree, every memorial accomplishes this end of getting us to look backward. One, for example, that did that, in February 1941 in Auschwitz, Poland. That sound familiar? You heard of Auschwitz before? Maximilian Kolbe was a Franciscan priest who was put in the infamous death camp for helping Jews escape Nazi terrorism. Months went by, and in desperation, an escape took place. The camp rule was enforced. 10 people would be rounded up randomly and herded into a cell where they would starve until they died. Either death by starvation or exposure would be the lesson against any future attempts at escaping. Names were called: a Polish Jew, Franciszek Gasiewiczek. Boy, those names are so fun to pronounce. Was called. He cried, "Wait, I have a wife and children." Kolbe stepped forward and said, "I will take his place." Kolbe was marched into the cell with the 9 others where he managed to live until August 14th. This story was chronicled on an NBC News special several years ago, and this Gasovnichek was 82 years old at the time. He was telling his story while tears streamed down his face, and they showed with a little camera following him around his little house a marble monument carefully tended with flowers. The inscription read, "In memory of Maximilian Kolbe, he died in my place." Since 1941, every day, this man had lived with the knowledge that he was alive because someone died for him. When we think about that, it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful thing to think about remembering someone who sacrificed themselves for you. And that is what the memorial of Christ is all about. It reminds us that every day we have lived only because Christ died for us. We've lived spiritually only because of His sacrifice. We are able to have a relationship with God only because He died for us and on our behalf. He died for all, so that all that live might live no longer for themselves, but for Him who died and rose again on their behalf. 2 Corinthians 5:14 and 15 tells us. Now, no, we don't have a little stone monument in our backyard to remind us of that, perhaps. But what we do have is a memorial feast on the first day of every week to call to our memory, we're only here because someone else died for us. The second thing that the Lord's memorial does is to help us to look inward. Many memorials strive to get us to reach inside ourselves. They want us to become better because of what we see. When we look at ourselves and we look at that memorial, it reminds us perhaps of someone or something greater than we were or than we are. And it gives us the opportunity to grow and to stretch. The Vietnam Memorial sought to unite a divided people. Now, the nation was very divided over the Vietnam War. There was a lot of strife and a lot of struggle at that time. And when the Vietnam Memorial was built, the goal was to bring the people back together and to remind them of the sacrifice that was made. That wall with all of those names upon it. So many people who died in that war. Joshua 22, verses 27 through 28 and 34 also carries with it this concept, this idea of bringing together a united people. And we'll have to talk about that memorial at some other time. Perhaps next year on Memorial Day we'll talk about Ed. Ed was a great memorial. But then perhaps we think about the World War II memorial that encourages us to be more like that greatest generation. You know, it's interesting. I remember for years, I guess it was probably Tom Hanks used to be on the TV all the time trying to raise money to build a memorial for our World War II veterans. Isn't that something? We already had a Vietnam War memorial. We already had a Korean War memorial. Those wars had happened years after World War II, and we already had memorials for those two wars, and yet we still didn't have one for those who had fought in World War II and had died in World War II. And it was an amazing thing. The first time I saw that commercial, I thought, really? We don't have a memorial for that yet? As much as our government likes to spend money, I would have thought, sure, they would have built 10. But, you know, they would have thought they would have had one for what's often termed the greatest generation. But perhaps because they were so selfless, because they were that greatest generation, they weren't clamoring and screaming, hey, build us a monument, build us a memorial. They were just still being selfless. And every time we think about that memorial, it can remind us, hey, we should be more like them. We should be less selfish and more selfless. There are other memorials, like the Memorial Museum that they have to the Holocaust in Washington, D.C. They mark times of upheaval, of troublesome times, and they ask us to learn the lessons of the past. Don't go back there again. Learn better. Do better. Don't make the same mistakes that were made in the past. There are memorials about slavery, about the Holocaust, other things to say, hey, this was a time when people were mistreated and things that were wrong were done. And we don't want to go back there and we don't want to do those things again. You know, each time we go to the cemetery or each time we see the stones in a cemetery, those markers that remind us again, we're all going that same direction. And it should encourage us to live our lives today to the best of our ability, to the highest level that we can, because we know life is short. It's just a vapor, James tells us. And we need to be prepared because we never know when it might end. So we need to be prepared for it. And we need to look inward and examine ourselves. When we go to funerals, when we stand at cemeteries looking at the gravestones, we need to look inside and see, what can I do to be better than I am? And you know, the Lord's memorial calls for introspection as well. 1 Corinthians 11:27 through 29, if we remember that, Paul had said that we were to examine ourselves. Let everyone examine himself. You know, amazing thing about the Lord's Supper, we don't judge whether somebody else has the right to partake of the Lord's Supper or not. We don't say, well, you can't take it and you can and no. No, we pass the emblems and each person examines their own life. They each look inward at themselves and then partakes of it or chooses not to. And I certainly have known times with people who looked at it and said, not today, I can't, for whatever reason. I don't always know what reason that is. And those men who have passed those plates with those emblems have probably seen someone who they might think would normally took this, the Lord's Supper, and shared in that, passed it by this time. And of course, perhaps even wondered, well, why? I wonder why they did that. But the Lord's Supper does call us to look inside. There are many memorials that cause introspection with some success, varying degrees of success, certainly. I want to share the story of Susan Herzog. I picked all the ones with really weird names today. Herzog's not as bad as the other ones were. She was 18 when she was killed on New Year's Day. Her killer was a 17-year-old Kevin Tuna. His case went to juvenile court. He was convicted of manslaughter and drunk driving. The parents filed a $1.5 million lawsuit against him, but they settled for $936 to be paid $1 at a time to remind Tunnel how what he had done to their daughter. He keeps missing his payments, and they keep taking him to court. He was sentenced in Fairfax, Virginia to 30 days in jail for contempt because he has not lived up to his agreement to make the payment. $1.5 million, and they settled down to $936 to be paid $1 a week. Why can't you make that payment? He explained. He begged for them to take two boxes of checks that would cover all of the payments for the 18 years that they were supposed to last from 1982 to 2000. But they insisted that he make the payment every Friday because she died on a Friday. He is tortured, tormented by those weekly payments, because every time he has to make that $1 payment, it reminds him of what he did. And he has to look at himself and realize that he's the reason that that young lady is not alive. You know, as we look at the bread and the cup, as we partake of the Lord's memorial, every time we do that, it should be a reminder to us to look inside and remember that the reason he died was because of my sins, because of your sins. He died for me. And every time we are at this memorial table, we need to remember that. And it needs to drive deep into our heart, and it should tear us up just like it tore up Mr. Tuno. To know, every week to remember, he died because of my sin. He didn't deserve it. It was my fault that he died. But then also the Lord's memorial helps us to look forward. You know, a lot of memorials try to attain that goal of reaching to some future benefit. There's going to be better days to come. There's going to be a silver lining. They may have some quotation on them. They may have some extra little bit to talk about the good things that are to come. They look for some better time to come. Tombstones are a great example of this. Many mention something of some brighter day. Notice this one, the unknown tomb. Those who have died in battle for the freedom of this wonderful country, from the Revolutionary War to now and into the future. Into the future. Still looking forward. In this case, not so much in a happy way or looking for a better day, but reminding us that in the future there are going to be wars and there are going to be people dying in those wars. And certainly since this tombstone was built, carved, there have been many more of our servicemen and women who have died. And many more will yet in the future. In the terrible circumstance that many times is the need for a memorial to be built. You know, most of the time a memorial is built to remember some event, and a lot of times it's some bad event. It's a war memorial, or it's, you know, something of that nature. A memorial to someone who died. That kind of thing. There is within each of those a hope that there will come a better time. That this loss that we've experienced here that caused us to build this memorial won't hurt us anymore like it does now. And that certainly is a good idea. It's a good hopeful spirit that says those kinds of things. But no other memorial has real hope for the future without the Lord's memorial. Because really, without the Lord, what better things in the future can we hope for? Nothing. In fact, we can only hope for things to continue to get worse without Him. And certainly there is no hope. As many of the tombstones think forward to that great day when the tombs will be emptied. But without the Lord, there would be no hope of such a day. In Matthew 26:26-28, and 1 Corinthians 11:26, Jesus again reminds them. He took the bread, He blessed it, He broke it, gave it to them, said, "Take and eat it, this is my body." Took the cup, gave it to them, gave thanks, said, "Drink all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins." Jesus actually established His memorial before the actual event. That's kind of unusual. Shall we start building a World War III memorial now? So that it's there when... No, we don't think that way. We wait until after the event to build the memorials. But Jesus knew what was coming, and He established His memorial and said, "Here's what's going to happen. And my blood is going to be shed for the remission of sins." Looking forward with hope toward a better time. Even though it would involve His death, there would be a better time on the other side of it. No other memorial can do that. In fact, without Jesus, there would be no hope for man. As we conclude, we want to realize that, and the Lord wants us to look backward and remember, to look inward and consider, and to look forward and hope. And if we'll do those things through His memorial that He left for us, it will serve the purpose for which He left it and the purpose that He intended it to serve. Yeah, see, y'all didn't know how to... You knew I was having trouble saying that name. Now you know why. Gasovna's checks memorial could make him remember the deed that Maximilian Kolbe had done. He could remember it every day, but it could never offer him any hope for eternity. It could make him glad that he was alive today, but it couldn't give him any hope for the future. The Herzog's requirement could make their daughter's killer reflect, look back, and it could also help him look at himself and try to better himself, introspection and retrospection, but it could not give him any hope. His only hope was for the time when the payments would cease so that he wouldn't have to continue remembering it. But the Lord's memorial accomplishes what no other can, because it helps us to look upward as well. In 2 Peter verses 3, chapter 3, verses 12 through 14, Peter says, "Looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, look for new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwells righteousness. Wherefore, my beloved, seeing that you look for such things, be diligent that you may be found of Him in peace, without spot, and blameless." Does the Lord's memorial affect you in this way? Does it remind you of the fact that you needed a Savior? Of the fact that without Him you'd have no hope for the future, no spiritual life, no hope for eternal life, no reason to continue living on for the future, because there would be nothing but sorrow ahead? As we consider the Lord's memorial, does it help us to look at ourselves and make ourselves better people? Does it help us to look back and remember His sacrifice, to look forward to a future, and to look upward to the skies for that day when He's going to return in the clouds, just as He promised? If you need to respond to God's invitation tonight, please do so as we stand and as we sing.